Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
It's 8:37. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning. So yesterday there was a communication from the CSO, and it read roughly as follows. Dear community, as you may be aware, over the last few weeks, a number of anti-Semitic attacks have occurred around the world. The U.S. has been particularly hard hit with incidents in Washington, D.C., in which two Israeli embassy staffers were shot and killed while leaving an event at the Capitol Jewish Museum, and in Colorado, where Jews were attacked with Molotov bottles. In both cases, the suspects, upon arrest, expressed support for a free Palestine. Multiple further incidents have occurred in Canada, in France, in the UK. So from what I'm understanding is that there are around about 10 incidents that we know of, significant incidents around the world, not necessarily in South Africa. The letter goes on to say this is a response to a call for the globalization of the Intifada, a call which is also being made in South Africa and is clearly a call to violence. As at present, says the letter, we have no specific information suggesting a threat to our community in South Africa. However, history has shown that international incidents like this can at times serve as a motivation. Joining me in studio is Liron Sanders. He is the CEO of the CSO, and we wanted to chat to him about this communication and about their approach to South Africa. Liron Sanders, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Thanks for having me. Very well, and yourself?
I am well, thank you. So coupled with that, I saw that in the last week as well, there was a News 24 headline. I don't subscribe, so I couldn't actually read the article, and I refused to pay for it. So there was an article that said something about head of ISIS in South Africa being arrested. We've seen this bubbling of certain incidents happening here as well. Without going into the details of what is or isn't happening, how concerned do we need to be in South Africa following these 10 incidents overseas?
So it's a good question. I think the most important thing to say, and specifically from my side, is there's been no change in our threat matrix and our threat analysis specifically to South Africa. So despite there being multiple incidents around the world, our threat level hasn't gone up or gone down. It's remained fairly consistent over the past few months. However, as we've seen internationally, there's a concern, and we wouldn't be doing our due diligence if we didn't send out this communication and didn't inform the public of what is going on. And that's really what we're trying to achieve here. We're trying to achieve the information flow from us to the community, as well as giving them some guidance on what they can do to make themselves a little bit safer.
So before we get to what they can do practically, what we can do practically, is how do you decide? You know, you're not a news agency. So how do you decide what is important enough, especially at the moment when we are seeing incidents virtually on a daily basis?
It's very hard, to be honest. We are not in the business of fear-mongering. That's the last thing we want to do. But we have a responsibility on our shoulders to make sure that the community is informed. So when we see a progression of incidents around the world, not individuals, and we see similar things happening around the world, that's kind of when we take the assessment, this is the time to communicate and urge caution.
Right. Although you're saying that you're not in the business of fear-mongering, a certain amount of fear is healthy. You know, we teach our kids to be fearful of a busy road because it's going to save their lives. It doesn't mean we're fear-mongering, but we are making people aware of, our kids aware of a danger of a open socket. Well, in South Africa, maybe it's not so dangerous, but an open socket or a busy road. So that is a balance, I imagine.
Yeah, there's a balance, and it's about an informed mindset. Okay. So we're trying to inform the community, expose them to things they might not normally expose themselves to, just so that they have that understanding.
Right. So what is the, what's the feeling at the moment? You're saying you're not raising the threat level. Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Do we function on threat levels
here?
Yeah.
So we function on threat levels specifically within the CSO. We have a sliding scale. Obviously, when the threat goes up and we deem it to go up based on a certain criteria, the security response has to go up. If it goes down, the security response can be eased
slightly. Does it ever go down?
Always. Really? Up and down, always up and down.
No, because it's always a thing, is it hasn't gone up or the threat level's gone up, but I wonder if I'm trying to recall if I know when it's come down.
So as a good example, if we look, I think it was 2 years ago, there was a terror threat in Sandton around the Gay Pride Festival.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember that.
Yes. Near the embassy.
Near the embassy there. So during that time, we raised our threat level. Once the weekend had passed and the festival had passed, we brought it back down to what is a norm or an operational norm. So, and really what it does for us is it dictates what security measures we need to put in place. Certain threat levels are operational for 3 or 4 days. Some are operational for months on end. So it's about balancing the need for security and the resources available.
Right. So where does that threat level stand today?
So we stand at a comfortable, sensitive level based on everything that's going around the world. We're not at an ordinary, relaxed level. We're slightly above that.
Okay. So you get all of this. Now you're watching what's happening around the world. You see all of these incidents, and they're very, very significant incidents, certainly for the United States. They're game changers, and it's recognized as such. What would make you at the CSO change the level to a higher degree of caution?
If we pick up on a specific threat per se to the Jewish community here, or we pick up something that may impact us locally, that's really when we change the threat level. Thankfully, most of these incidents have happened around the world, America, Europe, etc., and we haven't seen any backlash in South Africa. As soon as we see something that might change in the rhetoric, really, that's when we're going to start to have hard discussions on whether we change our assessment or not.
Sean L., I see your question. I am going to get to the practical, but I just want to first try and understand the landscape. And then we see these articles, but we see them from time to time. We know that there is some form of terror training in South Africa. We know that the South African government welcomes Hamas. We see this headline on News 24. I'm assuming that CSO works with government and with, or not maybe with government, but certainly with the other security bodies to be aware of when that represents a danger.
Yeah, so what's very important is security is a collective effort.
Right.
One person can't do security on their own, and one organization can't do security on their own. Something that we pride ourselves on is our relationships with other security companies and other governmental security agencies. So we have relationships with everyone, and we keep an open flow of communication always, and we're there to support the local police as they are there to support us and other security companies, etc. So we work with a handful of security agencies to put it into a category between companies and governmental agencies, and we work with all of them. And they work with us where necessary.
So even though the Jewish community has a very difficult relationship with government, with the ANC in particular, the functioning on a practical level in terms of safety and security is intact.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with
that. Would you agree, largely agree, not agree, disagree?
No, I would agree strongly. And the reason why I say that is we are area and community based. So as an example, in the Glen Hazel area, the police station is Sandringham Police Station. We have a very strong relationship with the police officers at the Sandringham Police Station. They support us and we support them.
Right.
And we do that on a broad basis of areas. And that's really where We work very hard to ensure there's good working relationships amongst any person involved in security, because the more of us that are there tackling a common goal, the easier it is to achieve.
Mm. And interestingly enough, just by having a CSO presence and working with police even though the focus isn't crime, it certainly has to work to reduce crime as well.
100%. 100%. So look, we're assisting them wherever they need help, and they're assisting us wherever we need help. And it's purely mutually beneficial relationships across the board.
Right. So that's quite comforting to hear. Let's just talk about, Sean L. says, please can you ask your guest what we are supposed to do practically based on the communication? And I think that's always the question, is being informed is one thing, but is there something, what's our call to action effectively?
So I like to simplify things a lot, and as I've said on previous shows, most houses have electric fences, mm-hmm. and why, but let's bring it down to a simpler analogy. Most cell phones have a password on it. Why? Not because you don't want your wife to
well,
see what's
might
on
it.
Might be. But
yes.
You don't want anyone who shouldn't have access getting access to your cell phone and your personal information. So what is that? It's a small security measure you put into place. So how do we translate that practically to security? Instead of walking, looking at your cell phone on the street or walking aimlessly, you want to be aware of your surroundings and what's taking place around you. There's this simple tool called awareness, and that's what we really drive down to everyone, is the more awareness you have of what's going on your surroundings, the safer you become. And I'm not saying you're going to see something and you're going to fight someone. You might see something that feels uncomfortable to you, and then you're going to call us, and then we're going to deal with it for you on your behalf. And that's really the call to action. The call to action is heighten your level of awareness and call us if something's uncomfortable to you and let us handle it.
To me, the issue is always, and maybe it's only mine, and I'd love to hear from listeners, 0618951019. I always find myself, not always, I generally find myself rationalizing an anomaly. So I might see something, I know it's out of place, it's alerted it, because I'm quite good at, I'm very observant, and I notice patterns. So I'm good at patterns. But so something is an anomaly to a normal pattern. I note it, but before I do something, I find a way to rationalize it and convince myself that it's actually fine. I don't need to do anything about it. It's potentially a deadly mistake. And as you point out in this letter, had somebody noticed this gardener, in inverted commas, at this parade in Colorado, that something was off there, it could have prevented people being hurt had they just called it in. But whether he was noticed or not, I don't know. But how do we get over this? And I think South Africans are worse, because sometimes we don't want to racially profile. We don't want to be that guy but we need to be. Do you have advice to get over that?
It's human nature to rationalize things. Your mind will try to justify that something's okay to you in order to prove to your heart and your body that it's okay. That's just how the body works. And the simple advice is, if you start to rationalize something, you should be in doubt, and then you should call us and let us do the actual rationalization for you. Based on real information. That's what we train to do, and that's our strong point. That's really why we're here. So it takes out that element of questioning the rationalization, and it actually comes and puts facts to it. So we can go and talk to someone and factually come back to you and say, listen, you did the right thing, but the person was okay. Or you did the right thing and this person was suspicious, if you see something suspicious taking place. Because we've got the tools and skills and training to identify what is and what isn't suspicious, or what is and what isn't out of place. And it just comes from experience. That's ultimately it. But the simple advice is stop rationalizing things, just call it in.
Right. So that is number one is be aware.
Yeah.
What else do we do?
So number one is be aware of your surroundings. Number two is, if there's anything out of place, call us. Let us know. No call is too many. I'd rather have a million calls coming through our control room a day than 10. Keeps us on our toes. And then obviously the next big thing is communal events that take place should be kept communal and should be kept, the venue shouldn't be advertised publicly, or your patents shouldn't be advertised publicly. The less that there is in the public domain for people to see and get information on us, the better. So the more, I don't want to say the more secretive, because that sounds...
You see, it's difficult that, because at the same time, let's say we go to an event, and it's a beautiful event at one of the campuses, and it's a celebration of something. Somebody like me wants to showcase how beautiful that is, either for people who aren't there or for people around the world, just to show what we have here in this country. But then, you know, then am I putting people in danger by doing that? I'm not saying before the fact.
Yeah.
I'm not saying to show where that target should be.
So after the fact, I think it's absolutely fine.
Okay.
Obviously, the guidance would be try not get into too specifics on specifically around security measures. So try avoid capturing any security measures. But if you're taking a picture of a crowd celebrating, it's not going to show any security measures. That's fantastic to show after the fact.
Right.
And obviously, if the venue is kept anonymous, then it's even better. Because if you're taking a picture of inside a venue, no one really knows where the inside of that venue is, so it leaves it up to question.
Right.
But we definitely must share the celebrations, and we definitely must be public about how proud we are. I would never want anyone
and
to
that's,
not
and
be
that's
proud.
Why, because that's the whole point of the CSO, is protecting Jewish life. And life means not just physical life, but life, way of life.
Exactly. Yeah. So as our motto is, it's protecting Jewish life and the Jewish way of life. Because you can't have Jewish life without the Jewish way of life.
Right.
If we didn't have kosher restaurants, there's no Jewish way of life, as a good example.
Right.
So it's
both. Are we seeing that other parts in the world where we have these incidents, for example, in the United States, are we seeing them playing catch up? Is that why this is happening? Or do you think, have different circumstances that result in these types of actions based on anti-Semitic feelings?
I think it's both right. Catch up and different circumstances. In terms of catch up, just to touch very briefly, I mean, the CSO has been around for 31, nearly 32 years, so we've got a lot of experience under our belt in doing these things. Whereas in the States or Canada, etc., they were heavily reliant on police forces. Whereas we weren't. We knew our police
force was limited.
We know our police force is limited, and the private security industry is much larger, so therefore we've got the experience in that.
So we haven't been able to trust the system, and therefore we haven't relied on the system.
100%. Or we can trust the system, but we know they don't have enough resources to support us.
Yes, you've got to be politically correct. I don't. I can, you can say different things to me. So you need to say that. I don't need to say that. I think that they're wholly inadequate. And they haven't provided, in other parts of the world, government support security at Jewish schools and Jewish installations. Here they don't. So it is very different. But again, I can say that maybe you can't. But either way, the fact is that as a result of not being able to rely on those aspects, the community has created its own form of reliance. It relies on itself. So therefore, we're a little bit ahead of what we are seeing around the world, 100%, potentially.
100%. You've hit the mark.
Okay, so that is where we're going to leave it. Just one message from you to the community following this communication.
What's very important just to understand is we are fully here for your security and safety, and here to support you. And if you're feeling uncomfortable, just call us, email us, let us know. Really, our doors are always open, and we're always willing to help. So we really are here prioritizing your safety.
Liron Saunders, CEO of CSO. It is 8:56. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.